You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today on the Cooligans, on the first segment, we talk about the Cascadia rivalry, Portland against Seattle. Fernando Adi, he's benched. McInerney is not a valid replacement. and Lodeiro is a magician. Also, NYC against LA, East Coast, West Coast rivalry renewed. Offside? Was it offside? The goal from Villa? I don't know. And Liverpool fans in the New York City subway, New Yorkers ain't having it.
In the second segment, we talked to John Arnold. You know him from Goal.com. He talks a lot about CONCACAF, but you know what else he talks about? FC Dallas. He's a big fan. He's letting us in on what's happening down there. Are there other fans? Where are they? Are they on the other side where the TV cameras? Because we don't see them when we're watching. But you know what we do see? Beautiful, beautiful football. They're really deep. They got rid of Fabian Castillo. We talk about a lot of those things in the second segment.
In segment number three, we talk about EPL a little bit. Everton, West Brom, Arsenal, Leicester. Also, Celtic fans trolling Israel? That seems odd. And also, Robbie Rogers having to deal with garbage. All this on today's episode of
The Cooligans.
Hi, I'm RJ Allen for New York City Football Club, and you're listening to The Cooligans.
Yeah, baby.
What's up, everybody?
Welcome to The Cooligans.
The Cooligans.
Thank you for all of our new fans, by the way.
Thy Cooligans.
The sirs who are Cooligans. Thank you for all of our new fans that are listening.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been the last couple weeks have been hot.
Yeah. Oh boy, we've been trending.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're trending on. Not Twitter.
We're trending on Friendster. You guys remember that one?
Yeah.
A lot of people talking
about
it.
We're hot on MySpace.
Google Plus. Big time.
You know, those services everybody uses?
You guys got to get on it. They're really crushing Cooligans talk on those.
Thank you for listening to the Cooligans. We are your favorite comedians who host a soccer podcast.
Yeah, we're your favorite comedians who host a soccer podcast.
That is correct.
We're like the DJ drama of, or is that Kaysley? That's Kaysley.
Nobody knows who either of those people are.
Boy, oh boy. Well, you know who these people do know who is, who they are. MLS teams. Wow, that went really far to go nowhere. I didn't even make eye contact with you because I was so embarrassed as I was saying it. But you get what I'm saying. You guys, we have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about EPL. We're going to talk about MLS. We got a great interview coming for
great
you.
Great interview coming up.
Oh my
up,
God,
man.
It's going to be a great one. Coming up for you in the second segment. But right now we're talking MLS. And why don't we start with what I think nationally, not just because we're fans of one of these teams, nationally was one of the top highlight matches of the week. There were two major ones.
Mm-hmm.
The battle for Cascadia and also the battle for, I don't know, the biggest lights in the country. What is that? I don't know what you...
They both sound like, two houses in Game of Thrones battling each other.
Yeah,
the way you frame it.
The battle for House Cascadia. I don't even want to make a reference to that show because it's going to be disgusting. But you know, New York versus LA, this is big in any sport. You know,
yeah,
these
are both big nationally televised matches.
And so besides New York and LA, we're also talking about Seattle versus Portland. Who do they have a name for that yet? Is it like a?
It's just two teams who hate each
hipster
other.
Hipster Classico. Is there a name for it yet?
That should have. The
artisanal Classico. Is it
the vegan derby?
Yeah, the vegan derby. the free range derby.
The hemp versus fish. It is quite a battle.
Oh boy, a great, great match. A lot of fun to watch, but the one we went to was New York NYCFC versus Los Angeles Galaxy.
Yeah, it's the first time Gerard. This is the first time LA Galaxy came to New York City.
They came to
New York City. Obviously they played the Red Bulls.
Well, of course, this is the first time they've had to swipe a Metro card.
Yeah, because last season NYCFC went to LA, and so this time they came to Yankee Stadium. Steven Gerrard was like, what's a home run?
Yeah,
you know, he was confused.
Why are the fans looking a different way? Well, the seats are just built that way, sir. It was a lot of fun. It was great. Great
atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere was incredible.
35,000 people in Yankee Stadium.
Come on, guys. 35,000. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was a very, very fun game. And just the energy leading up to it. The week leading up to it was just exciting. You felt that this felt like a much more important MLS game, because last season NYCFC lost 5-1, and it was just a very embarrassing effort. But the team was in, Pirlo had just gotten there. It was just they were still in sort of disarray.
Yeah. They were still sort of going through that Jason Kreis era. And now we're fully into that Vieira era. Vieira. It's just the Vieira is really all you have to say.
But NYCFC defeated LA Galaxy 1-0.
Tough fought. Those last few minutes were a little tense.
Yeah.
But I got to give it to the fans. The fans were incredible, singing Come On New York all through almost the last 10 minutes of that match.
Mm-hmm.
And, LA Galaxy brings a lot of talent. And, a lot of them were, I don't even remember Dos Santos even being there,
Dos Santos was kind of shut down. I don't know exactly what NYCFC did to strategically to just kind of limit him.
He kept looking for the other 35% of the pitch. He's like,
where should I stand?
He's like, it was uncomfortable.
He was like at a wedding rehearsal. Didn't know where should I be here?
My table's at number two, but all the seats were taken. I'm not sure.
But NYCFC, defensively, they haven't been the best team in the league. They've given up the most goals and also scored the most goals. So
it's tough to figure out what's going to happen every match.
It's literally 50-50 chance.
Yeah. It's a coin flip every time.
Yeah. So. There weren't even that many chances that LA Galaxy barely had any chance. Steven Gerrard, maybe he got one or two shots off. Ashley Cole didn't do much.
Although while he played very well going down the wing and he certainly, had some moments to expose us, it seemed like they never really took advantage of some big opportunities. But, props to the back line. Even without Maxime Cheneau, even without him and without Vieira really on the sideline, because they were both handed red cards last match.
That's right.
We had an opportunity to see the team sort of, come together. Was David Villa offside?
Yeah, so the lone goal came from a Matarita shot that took a bounce off the keeper
Keeper parried it. It was right in front of Villa, and Villa happened to be way ahead of everybody else.
I wouldn't say way. I can see why the linesman wouldn't have called it. To me, it didn't. Especially and being there, it didn't seem like it, because this is a question that I'm looking for an answer to. I don't know this. Villa was ahead of the last defender, but it also seemed like he was ahead of the ball.
That's the problem. And it was at the time of the shot. If he was behind the ball at the time of the shot and made his way forward, it's fine.
But the ball was also ahead of the last defender. There was no defender in line with the ball.
Wasn't there, though?
It was close. It was close enough to be like... But the question I have is, if you're behind... if the ball is behind the last defender, can there be a player ahead of the ball that you can pass to your teammate?
To my understanding, no, you can't. But that could be just because in the way that you're asking the question, I'm getting confused.
So
I get what you're saying. The defenders are way behind.
There's no defender on the field.
It's me and you. All the defenders are behind us, we're heading towards that goalkeeper.
Yeah, but I'm ahead of you, and you have the ball. Can you pass it to me?
I mean, physically I can, but I believe that you are offsides. You have to be even with me or behind me.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, I believe so.
I imagine if there's no defender at all in the play, and I'm ahead... Why shouldn't I be able
to get
the ball?
I think it's that the rule itself is now confusing me as to what the situation is.
If anybody knows this definitively, please tweet at us at Soccer Cool.
This offside rule is so easy to see, but so hard to interpret.
Because it seemed like Villa, the ball was ahead of the last defender, and Villa was ahead of the ball.
Right. So he was just standing there, and then the ball sort of just trickled right in front of him.
Exactly.
And he shot it in.
That's how I interpreted it. But if that's offside, then it's offside.
But I also happen to have missed that goal because I was trying to get in through security, which was ridiculous. Thank you once again, Yankee Stadium.
No, you guess your fault, man. You got to get there early.
I did the best I possibly could. I had something to do.
I got there early, and there was still a huge line. There was a big game. There were more fans than usual. And look,
also, they don't make it clear. There's like two lines, one's for season ticket holders. I waited in the other one along with everyone else until you got close enough to hear someone yell, "This line's for season ticket holders," and then I got right in. Whatever. I missed the only goal. But it was still a fun match, and I hadn't been to a match in almost 2 months at that point, so it was really exciting to be back there. Great match, and I think the travel, I think, is the big issue here. You know, a team traveling all the way from L.A., big difference. We saw it last year when we went there, you know?
Hey, okay.
You know, and, you know, we're seeing sort of, when they talk about, you know, soccer in the U.S., one of the things they keep mentioning is the travel, how difficult the travel is. And I think you could see the signs of that. You know, losing 5-1, we weren't a great team last year, but we certainly weren't 5-1 bad. And I know everyone's going to say, what about the 7-0 this year? Yeah, you're right. You know, the Red Bulls had our number in that match. So it's a totally different situation.
Yeah, they had our number 7 times, actually.
Yeah, that number was a full touchdown. They scored a touchdown in a baseball park playing soccer. Very difficult.
But, you know, it was, speaking to the energy of the city during that, in the run-up to that game, you know, I was on the subway, you know, heading to Yankee Stadium, and it was just so fun. There were a bunch of Liverpool fans. Obviously, Steven Gerrard.
You got a great video of this, which is hilarious.
Steven Gerrard was a Liverpool legend. So there's a big Liverpool fan base in New York City. Right. So they obviously went to, you know, go support him and go see him. So on the subway, a bunch of English people singing, screaming, chanting, singing the songs. There was a great moment between Liverpool fans and Everton fans,
right?
Who were singing the song
about Gerrard slipping.
Yeah. Oh, Gerrard. Yeah. It's something Demba Ba. I forgot the song. Yeah. But they did not stop singing it over and over and over, and to the point where I'm like, are they gonna fight? Yeah. But it's just like, that's just English.
It's just banter.
Football culture. Exactly.
Yeah, this is banter.
But in the
Liverpool fans started singing back at them.
Exactly. They were just, I mean, it sounded like just indiscriminate yelling at that point. It was just so loud of all the chants.
No, so but, you got Everton fans, you got Liverpool fans chanting against each other in a tightly packed subway car in New York City.
New Yorkers.
And this is where, so that's the English part of the story. Here's where the New York part of this story
New
comes
Yorkers
in.
Are like, excuse me?
Yeah, some lady was like, hijab. Oh, please shut the fuck up. Why are y'all so loud? And one guy goes, because we're English.
I'm glad I recorded it because it was such a great moment. And I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't expect them to fight necessarily, but I just thought it would be a funny thing.
Yeah.
And there was just because this Puerto Rican lady, but she also had her baby. It literally had a baby. You don't see it in the video, but she had her baby in a carriage. And I guess the baby was sleeping.
Yeah.
So she was just like, and she said it several times. She was like, you guys are so loud. Yeah. Can you keep it down? She was being fairly reasonable. She wasn't asking for that much. But yeah, they were just like, yeah, we're English. And then everybody started laughing.
Why? She goes, why are you so loud? He goes, because we're English. And it's so funny because, like, if you notice, the only people that ever really talk in a subway car is a group that might be drunk, a group of friends that maybe just saw each other, or people that aren't from New York. Everyone else is really, really quiet on a subway car.
The subway car is basically the quiet car. And Amtrak.
Forever. So when you get groups of people singing at each other, you just don't expect
it's
that.
It's the quiet car, the no eye contact car.
No. Please don't give that homeless guy money if you're sitting next to me, because then that homeless guy is going to come near me.
Car.
Yeah, car. And what if the train shifts and all of a sudden he touches me? Car.
Yeah, there's etiquette.
There's an understanding. One of the other big matches, which we both watched, huge match, big implications too in the playoff run, Seattle versus Portland. And I almost wanted to say Seattle versus Port, because I don't think all of Portland showed up for this one.
The land was not there.
Wow. Wow, man, what happened? First of all, you know who did show up is the Timbers Army. Their TIFO was so much better.
I didn't even see the Seattle TIFO.
It was just like like banners with words, like, you know, like the stuff that like Hearts of Oak have done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, like, yeah, fabric strips. It seemed way out of character for them.
Yeah, it looked like they just made it on like a label maker.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, like a big ass Brother P touch. Just one big ass Brother P.
It just, like, compared to the gigantic Tifo that took up an entire section.
The whole fan section, it was classy and very well done.
Yeah, it was very
cool. What was it forever? Like, not irresponsible, forever just like in your face. I forget the term they used.
I don't know.
It was like
the Seattle one.
Yeah. Not incomparable. If you look up Portland's TIFO, it's hilarious. It's just, it's like forever, never going away. Look it up real quick.
Sure. Yeah. It was the MLS Cup. It was like a,
no, it was like the banner for it. Like, you know, when you win like a Sundance Award is like what it looked like.
Okay.
Oh my God, it was so funny.
Great game. I believe it was
Game for one team.
3-1. I mean, just an entertaining game. A very open game. Seattle obviously has been having a terrible season. We talked to Matt Pence a couple episodes ago,
right,
about just sort of the state of the Seattle Sounders and really
forever not insufferable, by the way, because they won.
Okay.
So it's a big star with like sort of like the leaves around it, and it says MLS Cup champions in 2015.
I didn't see that forever insufferable thing.
Forever insufferable, which is, I mean, you know, it's like City when they took on their, you know, noisy neighbors, they took it on as like a positive. It's so great. You just gotta love it.
Well, and we were talking to Matt Pence about the Seattle Sounders, the beat writer for the Seattle Times, and he was just mentioning that he didn't really expect too much from the Seattle Sounders this season. He didn't think they were gonna make the playoffs. He said that at the time they were in ninth place, just like six or seven points back, but now it's looking like Seattle could get that sixth playoff spot. They're
playing so well without Siggy Schmidt.
Lodero.
And rolled on out of nowhere all of a sudden, coming in clutch, put him in my fantasy team, by the way.
it seems like it's a real possibility that they can get there.
And I, you know what? I just looked up what Seattle's TIFO was, and I have to give them all the credit in the world. They Rickrolled all of us.
Oh, yeah.
It's never going to give you up. Never going to let you down. Dessert you. Burr, burr, burr. Oh, my God. It's well done.
Clever.
Clever. Yeah. Not
didn't
not
look
nearly
as good. It wasn't as well done as far as like, the arts and crafts ability. Right. It's hard to compete with Portland Timbers.
You know, you got Valeri out there painting, you know, in Portland. And over there, it looks like you got maybe Valeri's kids. Yeah, you allow them to make it.
But the Seattle Sounders did win 3-1. I mean, the final goal was a strike from Fernando Adi, which
no celebration. And you and I were talking about this, or certainly we were tweeting about it. Fernando Adi not being put in the first 11, we were like, "What the hell's going on?"
Yeah, as soon as the match started, the announcers mentioned that he was a late scratch and that he was on the bench, and I had posted about it on Twitter, and said, I tweeted about it on Twitter already. I guess that's the correct.
You posted it on Twitter? Not you could say both.
Sure. And a lot of people were saying that it was tactically they were trying to have Adi start, like, come off the bench because
he scores more per 90.
Yeah, and
which sounds like garbage to me.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, yeah,
it made sense, but it's like, yeah, whoa, you're way over coaching.
Messi,
right now.
I'm sure Messi would be great Ronaldo off the bench would be great too. Like, but yeah, you start
the best player you have, especially when he's your main striker.
Exactly, and then we later found out that Adi was not, he was on the bench. It was a slight punishment because he missed the team flight.
So punish the whole team and the fan base who traveled because he missed the plane, which I at the end of the day, I kind of agree with, but you know, he comes on and he kind of effortlessly scores a goal and you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, punish him another way. And fine him. You know,
this is a big game as far as, you know, when it comes to the standings, this is a big game when it comes to our rivalry and, you know, reputation and things like that. I don't know. You put the coach in a weird position, right? Because do you ignore that because you know the skill and the talent of this player?
Because you need him.
Because you need him. Because Jack McInerney came in.
Oof.
And boy, oh boy.
I think I quoted myself as saying Jack McEnono. That dude can't, can't get a strike.
Yeah.
He can't even get it on frame.
He had opportunities. And look, when you play, with the front, when you have Valera behind you, you have Nagby there, you're going to get opportunities.
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything with that, man. That's a shame. And it looks even worse when Adi's there for like 4 minutes and scores immediately.
He's like, this is how you do it. what were you doing before? Why don't you just tell me what you were doing before and I'll show you what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was as someone who, for some reason I was pulling for Portland. You know, watching the match, I just because maybe I wanted them to make a comeback, and I just knew it was too late when Adi came in. There was that chance with that corner kick, and it would have been, you know what, 2-3, and it just wasn't enough time. Mm-hmm. But you know, you're kind of pulling for, you know, you wanted to just go all the way, you wanted to just be a great match all the way through. And at one moment, Seattle's running away with it, and you know, and I would say from the run of play, it didn't look like Seattle was that much better. You know what I mean? It just really was the finishing for Portland. Portland had a lot of opportunities.
Milano had a point blank opportunity that he messed up. And the game could have, I want to say the game sort of could have gone either way, but I thought Seattle really, really wanted this victory. I mean,
Seattle. You could see that, and I'm surprised that it wasn't the regulars. You know, Clint obviously had a great game. Jordan Morris
was unreal.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I think he fought off half the team at one point. He
literally barreled through so many. Wayne Powell, Diego Chara. Yeah.
He's just mushing dudes in the face.
Someone made a great video. Ariel Castillo had retweeted it. They that moment when Morris is just outrunning all these defenders and barreling through Wayne Powell and Diego Chara. They have a video of him, the Super Mario Brothers music when Mario gets a star,
yeah,
and he's just running through everybody, it looks legitimately like Mario running through all the enemies.
Yeah, it's so fun. It's so funny to watch, and it's, you know, you watch it and you're like, all right, look, this dude's playing out of his skin, and you got guys like Christian Roldan, who's, you know, really underrated. Ozzy Alonso had a great game.
He was great.
You know, you have great matches, and it just seems like, you know, Seattle for the season they had, man, they're really showing up at the end of this season.
They're at 30 points. Portland is at in sixth place with 32. So,
but Seattle has what? Seattle has a game in hand. Is Portland?
Seattle has two games in hand.
Right.
So and so do San Jose. San Jose is in seventh place with 31 points. So this sixth spot is pretty much up for grabs from about four teams, because the Vancouver Whitecaps are at 30 points and they're in ninth place.
Yeah, but they're sliding.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to make it. It's getting a little bit more exciting than we expected, because Seattle were just, look, while Dempsey was away, look, the start that they had were just awful. How much were we talking about Jordan Morris and how like terrible he's been, and he should have been in Germany, and
right, he was a bust. He was for us for like 4 weeks ago, and now all of a sudden.
And yeah, I think Jordan Morris is really finding getting comfortable, finding he's getting into his stride, because he looked unmatched. I mean, he looks faster. He looks stronger than everyone else on the pitch. And it really looked like Portland didn't have an answer.
Yeah, and he just would not give up. It's a cliche for saying like, oh, he wanted it more than, but you could see it. You could see it in that play.
Yeah, and he should have probably had two goals. He had those two opportunities.
We've talked about.
He tried to chip the keeper, and he just went wide both times. And look, over time he'll fix that.
He is still young, although young by American standards, but yes, young.
But overall, Seattle, you know, I
looking at the West though, I mean, you know, you got Sporting Kansas City, you know, who's played 27 games and they have 38 points. So it looks like 38 points is the first five. That's going to lock you in. I could see Sporting Kansas City maybe slide back, but you've got the last spot in the playoffs. You got Portland sitting there with 32 points, but they've only played 26 games. But then you go down to San Jose and Seattle, 24 games each. Houston's not going anywhere. LA Galaxy, 38 points with 24 games played. So they've got a couple games in hand over the guys above them. They're not going anywhere. I could see Sporting Kansas City maybe sliding down, and I could see maybe two teams getting in. But right now, it looks like it's basically a race between Portland, San Jose, and Seattle. And this is super tight.
Yeah.
This is as tight as it gets. You've got 32 points, 31 points, and 30 points.
It would clearly be, to me, the most disappointing for Portland if they don't make it in, because
they just won the cup,
and they haven't had the worst season.
No,
you know, especially compared to the
not
other teams.
Not a major amount of turnover either.
Compared to the other teams and how poor they've been, it would be very, very disappointing if Portland don't make it in. But you know, I want to just point out Nicolas Lodero. Lodero was, you know, I never.
It's like he played in this league his whole life.
He is. I mean, I want to say Messi-esque, you know, he's very, very evasive. You know, he doesn't have like the strength like the on either foot like Messi. I'm not necessarily saying that, but when it comes to a presence in the midfield and just making like correct decisions and avoiding defenses,
right?
Stellar. Just what a perfect signing, and how desperately Seattle needed something, and what, like, and I think he is that catalyst that is making them a much better squad.
And this has been proven. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but you bring in someone like a number 10, and you're gonna get incredible results, because you have someone that can direct. I mean, you know, the same way that Nagby and Valeri can do in Portland, and the same way, you know, you got, you know, some folks like, you know, in the past who've been able to sort of dictate some of that, you know, that offensive prowess, you know, your Higuaín's in the past. You got someone in there like Lodero, doesn't need a lot of time. He gets it. He understands football. You put the ball at his feet, he's going to find, and you've got some great players up front. I know we've been harsh on Jordan Morris, but, you know, the guy's at least getting himself open, and he's fighting for that ball. And Clint Dempsey, who's roaming around, Lodero understands how to get the ball to these players. And it's absolutely incredible. Yeah. You got guys stepping up around him too, because people are focusing so much more on Lodero. And let me tell you something, Brian Schmetzer, who's the guy who's taking over for Siggy Schmidt, this guy is pushing hard to keep this job, huh?
Yeah.
He's like, this is, if he gets them in the playoffs, you got to keep him. Yeah. You got to give him one more season.
Yeah, unless there's like some huge name.
Right. Like, you know, I think the rumor was Andre Villas-Boas coming. That was like a weird rumor I heard. But yeah, there's so many big names, you know, could Roberto Martinez.
But he's the Belgian
national team, that's coach, right, yeah. I forgot, but like there were so many of these names popping up that would potentially go to Seattle. I don't forget, you know, the fans, that's what draws some of these folks in. Speaking of that, and speaking of MLS, one of the teams we didn't mention leading the charge right now for this the supporter shield, you got FC Dallas.
Yeah.
And why don't we do this, why don't we take a break, and when we get back, we'll talk to John Arnold, yeah, who's a beat writer for FC Dallas.
Yeah, he writes for Goal.com. He covers CONCACAF. He's just an incredibly knowledgeable dude. I mean, he really, really knows his stuff.
And he gets that area. He understands that area a lot more than we do. So instead of us talking about FC Dallas, why don't we go directly to the source? Let's go to him. Why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back with an interview with John Arnold. You can't wait. Even if you're not a fan of FC Dallas, a wonderful interview. I hope you guys really enjoy this. We'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody, we're cutting into this break real quick. We will just ask you guys a quick favor. For those of you who are listening on iTunes, first of all of our fans have been great for sending us messages and tweets and telling us how much you love us. We love you guys back. We can use one more favor. If you guys are listening to us on iTunes, get on there and leave us a 5-star review. It would be huge.
Yeah, just, go on iTunes, leave a nice little, click the little stars, write a nice little message to us. That'd be really great. It'll help us in the iTunes ranking, and more people will get to hear about the show. So that's all we want to do. We want more people to know about the show.
Yeah, the bigger we get, the better it gets.
Yeah, the show that you love already, we just want more people to hear about it.
So yeah, we need all the love in the world is what we're saying. But if it would really help us go up those rankings, there's a lot of other podcasts on there, which I know are nowhere near as entertaining as ours. And certainly they don't put in the effort that we do. And we love you guys as fans. And we're trying to give you guys the most entertaining podcast as possible. If you can go on there and leave 5 stars and a quick little review, it would really help us out. It would be huge.
We'd be very, very grateful. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, baby, we're back.
We're back, everybody.
So we've kind of been doing this thing where we've been going to all the different, you know, clubs across the country and just talking about MLS. We're coming down to the playoffs. We're coming down to the final stretch of the supporter shield.
Yeah, it's about 8 to 9 games left.
Yeah, most clubs. This is like what? This is the final third of the season, mm-hmm. right? And supporter shield starting to, the picture's not necessarily as perfectly clear as it could be, but there's a few major players. And we're on the phone with someone who writes for one of the major players, FC Dallas. And ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, put your hands together for John Arnold, everybody. How are you, John?
Hey, doing good, guys. How's it going?
Yeah, not bad. Thank you so much for taking your time out to speak to us.
Yeah, we appreciate it very much. FC Dallas is, they've just been surreal this season. Just so, the last couple of years.
A lot of highlights.
Yeah, a lot of highlights. Yeah. But just in general, they've been a really fun team to watch. But I guess when it comes to, in MLS, it doesn't seem like they get the most or a deserved amount of attention.
Yeah.
Especially for being at the top of the Western Conference.
It's the most successful under the radar team in the MLS. any reason why you think that might be, John?
I think the biggest reason is that they're based in Frisco. It's, 40 minutes from Dallas, so you don't have the excitement that is, when you turn on a game in Portland, obviously everyone's like, ah, sweet, the crowd is doing crazy things and everyone's cheering and everyone's into the game. That atmosphere hasn't really permeated up to Frisco. It's hard, it's kind of the team gets frustrated when people bring that up because, they've been there for a long time. They have had some good attendances in various seasons, but it's been tough to get people out there. The other thing is that the capacity is not as high as it has been in past years because they're doing the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. So they've closed off a bit of the stadium. So I think the fact that game day atmosphere isn't quite as exciting, it's tough to show, the highlights and make it look, real pretty on ESPN or FS1 or whatever. I think that really does kind of permeate through. And the other thing is that this team doesn't have like a star. There is Mauro Diaz. He only speaks Spanish. He doesn't like talking to the press that much. But at the same time, certainly not of the same like David Villa level where it's just like an international superstar. So I think those two things kind of work against FC Dallas as far as getting some national love.
I mean, you guys are making a strong run, obviously, in the U.S. Open Cup. You're in the final, and that's coming on September 13th. If anyone is interested, it's you guys versus the New England Revolution. Do you think that would help sort of draw more attention to one from the local market, which we don't know Dallas very well, but we assume Frisco is technically just outside that Dallas Fort Worth area. One from the local market and two from the national market.
I think it'll get attention here, but it's tough because first of all, that game falls right in the middle or right at the start of football season. So everyone's just done their previews and there's like week one. And there it is. It's that game. And the second thing is that the only TV time they're able to find for that game puts it starting at 9 p.m. local time. I mean, I write for the Dallas Morning News, so like I'm going to be up against the deadline. We're not going to be able to do as much as we'd like to put in the newspaper because a newspaper has to go to print. And the TV guys, their newscasts go on the air at 10:30, so the game will still be going. So it's going to be tough. I think that they had an opportunity, and I think it's not a thing that FC Dallas could have controlled because U.S. Soccer sets that time. U.S. Soccer wanted to get the game on national TV. We all have suffered through Open Cup finals that weren't on national TV before or were on national TV and you almost rather they weren't. But these ones, it's good that it's on TV, but it's going to make it tough for people to really take notice of what's happening in the local Dallas area. And I think nationally too, it's the same deal. Yes, people will be able to watch the game, but I'm not sure how much hype that's going to get right there in the middle of the football hype.
That is there's no other word for it than it just being like a huge bummer.
Yeah, unfortunate. Yeah.
Because I've watched a couple of FC Dallas games this season. And look, obviously, for me, the draw was like, I want to see what Fabian Castillo is going to do. But just even after he left, they've still been pretty consistent. I think FC Dallas compared to other teams, we're in New York City, so when we watch NYCFC, we see that a lot of the stability comes from the experience, from the veteran players. But FC Dallas, I mean, I don't even know if they have anyone over like 30 on the team. It's just a lot of young players that are just incredibly good and very talented. So it shows that there's a structure built within the club that can allow for growth for young players.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that makes it doubly frustrating that, like, they don't get a lot of attention and locally and nationally. This is one of the most fun teams to watch.
Absolutely.
They're currently leading the Supporters Shield race. They've got good stuff going on, and yet no one's going out to see them. I mean, it's tough because, the product on the field, what are you supposed to do to make it better? I mean, maybe try and convince Fabian Castillo not to go AWOL, but that, you know, they tried, that wasn't successful, and they've still got a great team. So it's frustrating, you know, even more so that they're not getting fans out, because the on-field product, you know, what these guys have done on the sporting side has been incredible. You know, you look at it, even a couple years ago, you know, FC Dallas was not too relevant. You mentioned kind of the long trophy drought that they could break with that U.S. Open Cup. They haven't won a trophy since the second year of existence. So it's been nearly 20 years. It's been a long time. And this is, you know, an original MLS team back to the Dallas Burn days in 96. So it's frustrating, but they've done everything they can to make it an attractive product. And, you know, even more than just looking good on the field, I think it's they've done a good job of kind of making it look like the area. You know, there's a lot of people from South America that live in the Dallas area. There's a lot of Spanish speakers live in the Dallas area. There's also, you know, a lot of white people who speak English in there. Like, there's the kind of a blend of all these different players, partly because of Dallas's strategy of bringing up these youth players. And I like the team kind of looks like the city, which is really cool and something that the city could be proud of. But I don't think that Dallas or even Dallas Fort Worth feels like the team is really that much a part of the community. Again, I think it's just because they're so far and they try, but it's tough.
And that's a relatively new stadium. So there's no chance of trying to build something else in Dallas, right?
No,
you're sort of, you know, pot committed to this Frisco.
Well, and the other thing is, like, Frisco is a growing area, and it's not like, you know, I don't mean to just be the Frisco sucks guy, because, you know, there are some good things about the city. There are families moving into the area. The Frisco city and the Frisco school district have played ball with FC Dallas a ton of times. You know, that's the reason the stadium is out there, because they put up the money. And it is easy to forget that, like, this was the third MLS stadium to open. This was Lamar Hunt had the Columbus Stadium open, and then the Dallas one open. And I think you have to credit his vision. You know, looking back in hindsight, yes, they probably should have chosen a different location for the stadium. But at the same time, back then when that stadium opened, no one really knew the formula. We didn't have Toronto. We didn't have Seattle. We didn't have Montreal. We didn't have NYCFC. You know, we didn't have this kind of formula of, oh, young people will go to games if you put it in an urban center where they can get to the game with public transportation so they can drink before, whatever. You know, like, it seems common knowledge now, but back then, you know, that wasn't really the decided formula. So they missed out on that. And I think it's, you know, as much as I do kind of criticize the club for being out there, and not even criticize, I think it makes it tough for the club. They didn't know any better, you know, and I don't think you can really fault them for putting the facility out there. You know, the stadium itself and all the soccer fields that they have out there are nice. The team is good. That's what I'm saying. Like, everything out there is good. It's just people don't want to go out there because it's far, is my impression.
And it's that there's like, it's a massive complex from what I remember seeing photos of when they announced that the Soccer Hall of Fame was going to go there. It's not just the soccer stadium, right? It's like a part of a really big complex.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's fields. And so, you know, typically when the senior team trains and I'll go out there to interview the guys, you know, there's four or five youth teams running around. They have tournaments that they host with ease because there's so many fields out there. And it was like it's kind of the centerpiece of Frisco, the city's kind of development plan. So when it was first out there, there was nothing out there. But now there's, you know, restaurants and bars that you can go to after the game or before, what have you. And coffee shops and everything, movie theater right across the street. So it has grown up around there. And I think that's the club's hope, is that it continues to grow in Frisco and that young people move out there and buy tickets, or families kind of get on the board and buy season tickets. But so far, neither have really materialized.
Well, when you look at the quality that they're putting on the field, like,
which is tremendous,
which is great. And you know, the competition the Dallas Cowboys, I feel like Dallas fans can get a lot more pleasure out of watching FC Dallas. Yeah. You know, they're just going to lead to disappointment.
Do you want to see Romo tripping, or do you want to see FC Dallas potentially winning, you know, the Supporters Shield or the U.S. Open Cup? I mean, I'm a Giants fan, so watching anything with a star on it fail makes me happy. But, you know, watching FC Dallas, we've said it. We've talked about FC Dallas a lot on this podcast because we absolutely enjoy watching. But I got to admit, it's disheartening to not see anyone really in the, I mean, you do see some people, obviously, but, you know, sort of that the old Red Bull effect, you know, like, right, you know, Red Bulls before NYC was NYCFC came about. You know, people ask us all the time, like, how come you guys never connected with Red Bull? You know, they were further away, a lot like Frisco is. You know, for New Yorkers, it's a second swipe. Like, I got to wait for two trains. Are you out of your mind? Yeah. You know, I can go get three slices of pizza and relax. You know what I mean? And then also, you know, you go all the way out there, and then you're one of only a few thousand people that went, as opposed, you know, it doesn't feel like there's the draw, like it's a need to go type of event, like you mentioned in some of the Cascadia regions. So it is a bit disheartening. But when we watch the matches, which we, you know, other than this one last one against RSL. It's so much fun. And I think Christian brought it up. The youth, you guys have, I think you're the only ones doing it. And to Clavijo, who, if I'm not mistaken, he's your vice president or general manager?
He's the sporting director, technical director.
All right, cool. The technical director. He has made it so that the youth team or the youth setup trains with and against the senior team. Tell us a little bit about how much that has helped, because we've seen some incredible talent come out of the DC area specifically because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Dallas is a huge hotbed for talent, and they've also kind of expanded. You know, I think it's funny because sometimes people will say, oh, you know, it's maybe your European model with the academy, et cetera. But, you know, you look at Clavijo's background, you look at Oscar Pareja's background, Luis Munoz, some of the guys that they work with, you know, they come from South America, but they also have experience in the U.S. So I think they've had a nice blend of kind of how to raise that talent and kind of identify these kids with the skill, these kids who maybe, you know, I think the cliche, and I think there's a reason that we have this stereotype is, okay, American players are more athletic, South American players are more technical. They've identified a lot of players who are very technical. You look at a guy like Alex Zendejas, who they just sold to Chivas in Mexico. And you know, when you grow a player who's good enough to play in the first team in Chivas, you know, and can fit in with that style, you know, he made his debut a couple of weeks ago. I think it speaks to kind of what you're doing. You mentioned that they're playing against the first team guys, and a lot of the younger players are out there pretty regularly. You know, it's a regular thing, and I think it shows not only those players that they can kind of hang sometimes. I mean, there's certainly some embarrassing moments that they have to push through, and that's good. But I think it also shows those guys that the club is committed. And I think when you can see that end goal, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. You know, there's a lot of clubs in the U.S., I think, where if you're a kid, you're playing for them. You know, the dream is Europe, and it seems very far away. And then when it comes close, you snatch at it. But at FCD, I think the dream is to be a first-team player, to get signed to one of those, you know, homegrown contracts. And it's achievable, right? You can see it. You can see guys who have done that, like Victor Uyala, you know, who came out through the system, Kalen Acosta came out through the system. So I think that seeing those guys have success and then seeing them day to day and becoming, you know, essentially getting mentored by those guys is something that the younger players can really use as motivation to try and reach a goal, which is to make the first team at FC Dallas. And, you know, the other thing, the kind of dirty little secret behind it is, instead of going out and spending millions and millions of dollars on Frank Lampard or David Villa, okay, you guys
take it easy.
Wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Instead of going up and spending millions, you know, you invest maybe not the same amount of money, but it's still a significant sum into the academy. And then you reap these local stars who, again, you know, these guys are marketable. These guys are hometown heroes. You know, Acosta and Vic, you know, they've grown up here and are well known here. And I think, you know, people like to see them succeed. And look, when the club sells a player like Alex Zendejas or even like Fabian Castillo, who kind of forced their hand a little bit, you know, they reap the benefits financially. And you know, then there's another player there in the academy to replace them. So I think it's a wise strategy, a strategy that maybe other MLS teams are starting to get wise to. But I think FCD was certainly kind of the pioneers and the Hunt ownership group and Fernando Clavijo and Oscar Pareja deserve a ton of credit for you know, instituting that system.
And I meant Dallas area. I said DC by mistake. But all right, Christian, you have a question?
Yeah, I was just gonna more of a comment. Just because you see that this system is in place and that it is, and you use the word that it can reap like benefits financially. It's like, yeah, you know, in instances where maybe the you know, the support from the community is not at its highest, they're still making a ton of money from the players that they're selling.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big Everton fan, and Funes Mori came up through FC Dallas. And so,
did he spend a lot of time there, or was he there for a short period? Is he from, do you know if Funes Mori, the twins, there's twins, right?
Yeah.
Are they from the Dallas area?
They're from Argentina. They were living in kind of questionable legal immigration status in the DFW Metroplex. And that's part of the reason it's something that I'd like to explore a little more, because I think people a lot of times say, how'd you let these guys go? You know, you got a Premier League defender and a Liga MX starting striker, and you had him in your youth system and you guys, you know, let him go. But I think it was a little more complicated than that. But they were, yeah, they were in the system for a little bit there.
Yeah, that wall's not going to help, huh?
It's Argentina, you know. Argentina, you can't, you know, run across from Argentina. You got to take a plane, so something happened.
Well, you can drive. It is connected.
Yeah.
Well, you know, come on, Panama, baby.
we could talk for hours about the sadness about FC Dallas and the things that they don't have, but they're in a really great position, right?
Yeah. And the sporting side is in incredible shape.
And I guess one of my questions about what attributes to their success this season? They've basically been in first, they are in line for the Supporter Shield. What do you think has been the biggest reason for that?
Is it the talent? Is it the attacking style? Because we watch it in awe.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of players who are good at what they do, and they know exactly what role they're supposed to fill. I think there's a couple different things that have kind of taken FC Dallas to, you know, last year they only missed the Supporters Shield by just a tiebreaker, I think, against the Red Bulls. So, I mean, it wasn't like this was a bad team last year. They went out and added Carlos Grezzo, who's a defensive midfielder. I think he's been big because, he brings some grit to the center, which they didn't really have as much last year. His recoveries have been huge. And then the other thing that's been interesting to watch is that before the season, a lot of fans were pretty frustrated that the team didn't buy a number nine, a big kind of plodding forward to replace Blas Perez, who went to Vancouver. They brought in Maxi Arruti. But to me, Arruti, even though he's not that like big guy, he fits in better with the system because, you know, you look at Mauro Diaz, Michael Barrios on the wings, formerly Fabian Castillo, but now whoever they kind of stick out in his place. I got some New York noise in the background.
We're on a busy street here, so everyone driving, people message us all the time. They're like, I hear cars honking, this is killing me because I listen to you guys on the drive. Sorry about that. Go ahead, you were saying.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I just some authentic New York flavor. I'll try and get like a rodeo cowboy to ride his horse.
If someone could yell "Yeehaw" in the background, yeah, that would be great for us.
I'll see what the neighbors can do. Yeah, just to increase everyone's stereotypes. I hear like traffic noise from you guys, maybe a subway, announcement, and then you guys can get the horse coming by in the background.
Yeah. That would be amazing. Really confuse our listeners.
Right. Yeah. Well, absolutely. Unless they're in Texas, and they'd be like, "Oh, typical."
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that Maxi Arruti has been huge because he not only does he occasionally score goals, he gets in and helps set up goals. He's very fluid with his movements. He understands where he's supposed to be on a counterattack, which FC Dallas loves to get forward on. He's also way better defensively than the vast majority of players who FC Dallas currently have going forward and have had in the past. You know, he gets in, he recovers balls. I think that's been the biggest thing, is that like Grezzo and Arruti have added to how quickly FC Dallas gets the ball back. And obviously when you get the ball back quickly, then you're able to spring that counterattack that they score on so often. So I think that's been enormous and probably been the key to them being even more dominant this season. The one thing I'm fascinated about is that they have said all year and are sticking to their guns that they want to have success and win all three tournaments that they're in, the league, the cup, and the CONCACAF Champions League. So we've seen guys play a lot of minutes, but this team is pretty deep and has been kind of devised for that. I don't think they'll run out of gas here in September, October, November. But, you know, that is something I'm going to be keeping an eye on for these last 3 months, the stretch run.
How much of what's the ratio to the starting 11 that you would have in an MLS match or a playoff match to the team set up for CONCACAF Champions League? Because I know in Europe, and I know it's not necessarily what they do in the Champions League, but from some of your different cups, maybe your Capital One Cup or some of these domestic cups, they would send like a lot more youth players. Is that something that's consideration? Because I know, you know, this CONCACAF, especially with the travel, that could really wear you down.
Yeah, we're talking on, what day is it, Tuesday? They play, sorry to tear back that wall. They play Wednesday in the Champions League. My hunch is that they're going to do five or six changes, but I think you'll still see a number of kind of the regulars. That'll be a change from what they've done, because even in the cup matches, you know, when they beat LA in the Open Cup semifinal, it went to extra time. They got a late equalizer and then a late winner. It was, you know, dramatic, incredible. That was a Wednesday night. They flew back, had one day of recovery, and then they had an MLS game on Saturday. And so I was expecting, okay, we're going to see an alternate side, which Oscar Pereja did do once in Seattle. He didn't do that. They only made, I think, three changes in that game. So, I mean, you're seeing a lot of guys who you know, are playing a lot of minutes. But when I asked the team about it, you know, Pereja and the guys are saying, you know, our fitness staff takes care of us. If we feel like we're ready to play, we're going to play. So, I mean, so far, so good. We'll see if it continues. But I think in Nicaragua, we'll see several switches.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, one of, I guess one of the winding down questions I wanted to ask about. Just what we were talking about, Fabian Castillo, and obviously he, you know, it was a big move, and he wanted to go, and you know, and you can't really knock a player for just wanting to make more money. Yeah. I mean, that's what it seems like. It was a big incentive, which is totally fair. But you know, a couple weeks ago, you know, when we talked about Fabian Castillo's Rabona, the Rabona assist to Urruti, which some people would say broke Twitter, similar to Kim Kardashian's behind. So it was, you know, one thing I'm just curious about is how did that, because to us, that was a very defining moment in MLS, because that was a very highly viral clip. It's very shareable, and it was just, it was absolutely incredible.
And like we said, if Cristiano Ronaldo would have done the exact same thing, it would be all over the world being talked about.
Yeah. So how did that moment affect? Did it affect the Dallas area in any way? Did it affect how people looked at the team? You know, what are the positive results from that amazing moment?
Let me be honest, I wasn't here. I have no idea how it affected Dallas. I will tell you, I think it affected not necessarily his transfer, but how excited other teams' fans were about his transfer. I can't tell you how many, you know, because of course, you know, I'm hearing stuff from different people, et cetera, but then, you know, sometimes you just want to plug into Twitter and see if anybody, you know, the Turkish media is reporting something. He was also reportedly a target for a Colombian team, you know, back in his native Colombia. So both time, you know, every time I would put in Fabian Castillo, both sets of fans in you know, their respective languages. So I'd see tweets in Spanish, which I, you know, understand, and then tweets in Turkish, which I have no idea what they're about. But it would, you know, invariably that GIF would be attached, you know, hey, look at this guy we're going to sign. And I think it really drove up the excitement. I don't think it, you know, it's one of those things where I really doubt that, like, they're sitting in negotiations and, you know, if somebody on FC Dallas side says, well, like, you did see this GIF, right? So we're gonna need a little bit more cash for this guy.
Yeah, come on, he's a meme, bruh. You need to put a double another zero on that joint.
Right. I don't think that was quite the case, but I think it certainly helped fan excitement. You know, that was a weird thing. And you say you can't fault the player for wanting more money. I totally agree with you there. I really like Fabian as a guy. I'm surprised that he didn't wait until the end of the season, because Clavijo said publicly that FC Dallas was kind of planning on him not being a part of the team after the year. And, you know, you wonder if you know, it's a couple titles don't help boost your stock a little bit. And maybe, you know, I heard some of the other clubs that were reportedly interested in him. I wonder if he would have found a better spot, with all love and respect to Trabzonspor. And I know you guys have a ton of Trabzonspor fan listeners.
Huge.
No disrespect to them. But, you know, I wonder if he might have found a better situation. But he decided the time was right, and he's gone.
Let me ask you a question, because we haven't been able to find any information. And if you don't know any, are not allowed to say, that's fine. But we looked at the guarantee, whatever the MLS Players Union release, and it said he was making about 170K a year here. Do you know if he is making that much more money in Turkey? Because Trabzonspor isn't one of the major clubs there, or certainly not one of the top two, you know?
I had heard things about the player. I heard things from both sides saying that number is, you know, totally wrong. And also, hey, that number is right. So I don't know. I don't know what the situation was there. The thing to me is, and again, this isn't, you know, a slight toward anyone. I just feel like it wasn't, you know, you don't have to be a transfer expert to know that didn't really go down like anyone had hoped. And I think it was, you know, I'm not sure he ended up benefiting as much as he could have in the long run. But I mean, obviously, you know, hope he's happy. And I think, you know, when you ask FC Dallas about it, this is a guy who they brought to the club when he was 19, who Oscar Pereja had lived in his home for a while. I mean, this affected the coaching staff personally as much as it affected the team. But, you know, I think they are, you know, genuinely being confident when they say in press conferences and interviews, et cetera, we are moving on without Fabian. We love him. We would welcome him back. But right now, this team can still win the trophies that we want to win without him. So I think it hurt them personally, you know, as men, more than it hurt the, you know, how they're lining up the team, because I think they kind of see it as another, you know, it's almost like dealing with an injury. That player was there. It's nice if he's there, but this team does have the depth to kind of get around it. We'll see if they can fill that spot as effectively as they're hoping they can.
I mean, that depth is probably one of the main things that I think you guys have going for you. And what a better way to to end this interview than that right there. First of all, absolutely amazing interview. Is there anything that you want people to follow or to read of yours, or where can they find you? What is it that you want our fans to know about you?
I'm at Arnold, John on Twitter. You know what? I do a decent job there. And I've got a Facebook page as well. That's if you do facebook.com/JohnArnoldFootball, F-U-T-B-O-L. I write a lot about Mexican soccer, some FC Dallas. So there's probably going to be some stuff you don't like to read about in there. And just like that anyway. Click on the link. And that's all I ask of you.
Nice. That's perfect. Of course, you know, you could, John, what is it? Arnold.John, you said, on Twitter?
Arnold, John.
Spell out, no H in John.
No H in John. Absolutely. Very, very good interview. Thank you so much. For our fans, we'll be right back after this.
Hey guys, are you a fan of Premier League Fantasy? Well, the Cooligans now have a Premier League Fantasy League that you can join. You can play with us. There's going to be prizes to the winner. So join our league.
See if you can beat us. We're both in there. There's a bunch of other fans in there. Get in there. Show us what you got in the Fantasy Premier League League.
Yeah. Scoring starts week 3, so you have time to join. Go to soccercooligans.com. You can email us, soccercooligans@gmail.com, if you want the link for it. You can find it on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So it'll be there. If you follow Soccer Cooligans, you will hear about the Premier League Fantasy League that we have going.
Absolutely. Email us, soccercooligans@gmail.com, and get involved. Cooligan's Corner.
Cooligan's Corner.
Yeah.
La esquina de Cooligans.
La esquina de Cooligans. The Cooligans. Culiacan. I never thought about it. That was a nickname for butt. I don't know why. It's a town in Mexico, but in my house, saying Culiacan meant butt.
All right.
I don't know why. Why am I sharing that with everyone? I thought Christian, being another Latino, was going to come in and go, I've heard of that, or I've never heard of
that. Never heard of that?
But you let me sit out there and marinate in it.
I thought you were just literally just reminiscing. I thought you were just about to cry. Like, yeah. Just like, I'm just, my grandpappy used to call me Culiacan.
Yeah, he used to call me butt. My grandfather, big fan of just calling me, get over here, butt. I don't know why he has a southern accent.
Welcome to Cooligan's Corner.
We haven't talked about EPL. We're going to do a little bit of that in this segment. You know, sorry, Igor, over in Portland, but we're going to do it.
Yeah, we have one of our listeners, Igor, from Portland. He really hates it when we talk about the Premier League.
Loves it when we talk about Portland, though. Maybe not this set. Maybe not this episode, because they didn't do too well. But the fans did great.
But yeah, yes, Cooligan's Corner, if you haven't heard before, we just cover all the stories that we may have missed throughout the show.
Because a lot happens. It's soccer. The whole world is playing it.
Exactly. So, little EPL stuff.
You want to start with Everton?
Yeah, as you know, or you may not know, I'm a big Everton fan. Alexis is an Arsenal fan. So
long-suffering.
We like to talk about those teams from time to time. Everton won against their fixture against West Brom 2-1. It was a
come from behind win, which is always fun for, you know, building that camaraderie.
And something Everton is not used to.
No. Winning in general. But come from behind.
Yeah. For Everton, the default is give up a very late lead.
Right.
And end in a very sad, sad, depressing draw.
Yeah.
Or just,
and hit the post 38 times.
Pretty standard stuff. But no, they looked pretty good.
Two matches might be tough for you, but how does it look now with Koeman as opposed to with Roberto Martinez tactically? What do you think?
It's tough to say because, look, all right, so there was a draw against Tottenham in the first match. And this match, I couldn't tell if Everton was good or if West Brom was bad. So, right, it was difficult to tell, but Everton, they had possession. I mean, they looked like Barcelona against Sporting Gijón, right? They just had possession basically the entire match. I think West Brom, they look like they didn't. There wasn't any real cohesion, right?
Right.
And they got an early goal from a corner kick from Macaulay.
Yeah.
And then Everton,
10th minute. I mean, that puts you right on your back.
Yeah, Everton looked like surprisingly, like they weren't affected by it too much. They really had, like I said, they just dominated possession. They had all the better chances, and it was a little motivating. It's like, oh, this Koeman era might work out, right?
Right.
But honestly, I think I was most excited about You know, Lukaku didn't start, but he did play, and also said he is now staying with Everton, which is interesting, right? Because Lukaku, he now after like that nobody wants him, he's like, right. You know what? I think my heart is where
it's like a sitcom where like the other girlfriend slaps the guy in the face and leaves, and he turns around to the other girlfriend and goes, you know, babe, I think I should stay with you. It's kind of how
that's exactly how it played out.
I loved you the whole time, babe. You know? Forget those other.
Forget her. Yeah. This is always I'm
she
confusing.
Wasn't important. I knew she was gonna do that, and that's why I played along.
Yeah. So now news is like he is gonna stay because I think nobody wanted to pay the price that
right. And when Morales did score, he seemed to be jovial in his excitement.
Oh yeah, because
and he seems like he's getting along with everyone.
He hasn't. Lukaku or Morales?
Lukaku.
Okay, yeah, because Morales was very happy. He hasn't seen the back of the net in a very long time.
Yeah, in a very long time. But there's quite a few players that can hit the back of the net, like De La Feo. I mean, has he been so far?
De La Feo looks like, especially without Lukaku there starting, he looked like he wants a bigger role on the team.
Right. Well, Coleman plays his style, you know, so this is perfect for De La Feo.
He had the ball a lot. He was able to be clever and creative, and it seems like he has a larger responsibility right. this time. He was subbed off why am I forgetting his name? From Crystal Palace. They just got there.
Not Benteke. What's his name? Bolasie.
Yannick Bolasie. It's a brain fart. Bolasie looked incredible.
Yeah?
Incredible. Just we were talking about Jordan Morris earlier. He just looks fast. He's again, he's also not the
Crystal Palace mold of just being tough and fast.
Yes. And he looks like he's going to be a great addition to the team. I'm very, very excited.
It's so weird, you know, as an Arsenal fan. And let's talk about that. Like you see Everton fans, they're still not sure what the team is, you know,
and
though we're at the beginning of the season, things are coming together.
I think this is what I'm kind of, realizing about the Premier League, that the beginning of the Premier League is very it's in a little bit of disarray right
because the transfer window is still open. It's almost still a little preseason.
This season starts way too early. Yeah. It's like nobody's ready.
No,
literally the players are not ready.
Yeah, they're like, well, wait, what?
It's so odd. Like, it's
they still
like,
got weird tans
and it's in a sport. Yeah, exactly. They're like, they just got back from Fiji.
Wait, what already? Someone's out there wearing flip-flops. Like, nobody told me, man.
You wouldn't see this in any other sport, especially here, right? Yeah. Because like, imagine the season not starting with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo. And imagine a basketball season where the first game of the season did not feature any of these players.
Patriots fans are about to find out what it's like.
For four games,
quarter of your season.
You know, same thing, La Liga. Ronaldo's not playing. Yeah. That season just
Neymar's going to get a break.
Neymar's going to, he's
getting a break. They said it.
Yeah.
So he just got back from international duty. He's going to get a nice little break.
That was another. Neymar just won Olympic gold.
Showing
Messi how to do it in penalties against Germany, like getting revenge.
Yeah.
And that was a really amazing video. I don't know if you saw it, of Neymar arguing with a Brazilian fan after.
No, I didn't see it.
So after, he's basically lapping the Maraca now, right? You know, showing off, showing off, they didn't get the gold medal yet, but he's just proud of the victory and stuff like that. And apparently there was somebody who was critical against Neymar, maybe, I don't know, blogged about him or something, or maybe swiped left on Tinder.
Salon.com post.
I don't know what happened, but he specifically went up to I don't know if it was a man or a woman. It was just a lot of screaming.
Right. Well, we didn't ask how they identify, so you're right.
it's just video of someone holding a phone and him walking up basically to the stands and just screaming specifically at one person. So apparently someone was very critical.
Neymar did have a tough start to the campaign. Well, Brazil had a tough start to the campaign.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it makes sense, you know. Well, hey, who won? You know, what are you arguing about? He brought gold home.
Exactly. But he was, he just went up.
He's just lucky the U.S. didn't qualify. Anyway.
Arsenal against Leicester.
Oh, boy. Neil. So, look, Leicester, we still have their number. You know, they haven't beat us in the last two seasons, and this season or previous. Again, yeah, you know, I hate to say, Arsene Wenger's mad about the transfer policy. Oh, what do you mean we're not buying? What do you mean we're not buying? We're not buying. That's what we mean. We mean exactly what you just said, bruh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's this big rumor that there's going to be something revealed either midweek this week or Monday that it's almost done. If it's Mustafi, I don't care anymore.
Okay.
Rob Holding looks just fine. You know, I know we don't have Mertesacker and I know we don't have Gabriel. I think we'll be fine with Chambers. He'll settle in. Mustafi is great. That is not primarily what we need. Primarily what we need, all hands should be on deck. He said what's important is that our 600 employees get paid. All 600 employees, from the janitor all the way up to your assistant, Arsene Wenger, needs to be looking for a striker and finding where that money is to buy a striker. If we go into the season and Theo Walcott is our center forward and his backup is Giroud, we have failed. We have failed. I don't think I was hanging out yesterday with Isaac. Isaac, absolutely awesome dude. You know, from England. He knows me from Twitter and he's like, dude, I'm in town. I got to sit. We got to bitch about Arsenal. We went and got a pint, maybe a few of them. And we talked about Arsenal. And the entire time is either one of us don't think we're going to make it in the top four. If this is the club, and if you bring in a center back, great. Thank you. Unless that center back is willing to run the ball all the way up and score, you know, 20 times in a season, we are not going anywhere. We are not doing anything. This is going to be yet again another tough season. And Arsene Wenger, I've loved you. I've loved you since the year after I began following Arsenal when you first became the manager. It is time to go. It is absolutely time to go. If you don't
second week in the season.
Dude, but this is where I was. I gave him the summer. This is where I was at the end of last season. Yeah, we had St. Tyrone's.
This is how you were at the beginning of last season.
Yeah, this is probably how I was at the second match of the last season. This is enough. We have had enough.
Yeah.
You spend that money. It is embarrassing that teams like Everton and some of these other teams are keeping their best players and going out and finding good replacements, where we as Arsenal, no offense to Everton and some of the other teams, we have more money, we have more fans, we have all of this, and we're not spending any of it because we're not finding good deals. Stop haggling over guys like Mustafi. The rumor is that they're haggling over £2 million. Dog, we could start a Kickstarter and make you that, okay? What are you doing?
Well, speaking of crowdfunding, Celtic recently played a Champions League match against a team from Israel.
From Israel.
Yes.
And the fans decided, let's make a statement.
I should have looked this up. I forgot the name of the team, but they have...
Maccabi.
No, it's not, yeah. not Maccabi Tel Aviv, but it has beer in the...
That's right. It does have beer.
In the name. Yeah. Like literally the word beer.
Beer, yeah.
So Celtic is playing this Champions League match. And obviously the fans look that, you know, there's not, there's occasionally, you know, I've read about issues with Israeli teams playing in certain areas, obviously, because there is there's anti-Semitism all over the world.
Right.
It's very popular for
and
some
reason. And also, you know, the things that are going on in that area.
Yeah. People have their opinion, but the fans of Celtic, so they held up a bunch of flags from Palestine hundreds. So they were very, very, they were clearly visible in the stands. And I believe FIFA might be fining them for this. There might be some punishment for this, but they responded by saying that whatever penalty that the team suffers,
the fans are doubling down.
The fans will, crowdfund money to pay that and also double it to and give it to charity. So they are, I don't know if it's specifically anti-Semitism more than it's a political stance that they're trying to make. So it's hard to say. And it is a gray area to some degree of what their intentions were. But at the very least, we definitely know it's trolling, right? There's no...
I don't know that it's trolling so much as they're like, no, we made a statement and we're going to double down on the statement. If I'm not mistaken...
Well, no, they wouldn't hold those flags against, you know, if they were playing the Rangers, you know.
Well, I mean, because... So there's the religious thing between the two of them. If I'm not mistaken, the Rangers are the Protestant team and the Celtic are the Catholic team.
Okay.
So the anti-Israel thing may have something attached to that. They are very proudly religious, you know? So, you know, that I'm really skirting saying anything offensive to anyone.
It's not even about it's just like trying to understand what their intention was. Because right. I'm not saying it's definitively wrong.
No. And listen, there's a lot of people that believe that some of the stuff Israel has done to Palestine is not the greatest. And there's a lot of people that believe what Palestine has done to Israel isn't the greatest. And there's a lot of people that believe both. Hey. And there's a lot of people that believe that none of that even exists and they're not even there. listen to our friend's podcast, Deep Inside the Rabbit Hole. But you know, for those fans who decide that they rather side with the Palestinian side of the argument, this is what they've done. And instead of saying we're going to let our team be fine, we're going to match that and send that over to charity for Palestine.
They're not walking back on what they've done.
No,
they're not apologizing.
They're trumping. They're going in there. Of course, I said that. Like, you know, he famously.
And she's a pig too.
Yeah. Or he said that. I think Obama founded ISIS, and some Republican radio guys like, I think what you mean to say is the vacuum that he left. And he goes, No. I meant to say he founded ISIS. So it's just like, okay. Well, then you really are. You know, you've steadfast in what you believe, and you know, sometimes can be a positive. Sometimes, as we can see, it can be a negative. I'm not sure where to stand with the Celtic fans on this. I think it's always ugly whenever you bring politics into sports, so that's all I'm gonna say.
Okay. And finally, for our last story,
speaking of
Robbie Rogers of the LA Galaxy, you know, obviously I believe it was about maybe 2-3 years ago when he came out. He is an openly gay man. He's been playing on the Galaxy for a couple seasons.
And he had left the game thinking that it was going to be a big issue.
That's right.
And he made his way back, and he's doing great. He used to be a forward. Now he's a right back.
That's right. And he didn't play. We didn't see him on Saturday because he was recovering from an injury, but he did play in a USL game, basically a rehab game, so he can get back to the first team in LA. And he dealt with, I guess, you know, discrimination.
Discrimination.
Yeah. I mean, the word that was thrown at him
countless times
from an unnamed player was queer. He was called queer over and over and over. And he wrote about it. He posted about it on social media. And obviously now there's an investigation by the USL, by the MLS, to see how this could be handled. To the team's credit, I have to look up. I forgot what team they were playing, but the team said even players on the opposing team apologized for that specific player's behavior.
Yeah, and there's something that I love about American soccer is that what separates us from how maybe it's treated in the rest of the world is, you know, they don't allow this. This is a highly frowned upon.
Yeah.
As comedians, you know, we're big on words, and you might have heard one of my rants previously.
Yeah. You have called me a queer lots of times.
Lots of times. I shouldn't have written it on the back of your head. I feel so bad. But no, I think when it comes to maybe saying jokes and stuff, and even, you know, soccer players try to get in each other's heads, I mean, I think there's nothing that you can't say, but this had no place in the sport. There's a lot of things you could say to Robbie Rogers to try to maybe get in his head and to get an advantage. This part of his personality or his character or who he is as a person does not need to be brought up. And that's just absolutely disrespectful and really antiquated.
Yeah. And it isn't even like, you know, sometimes there are people that are like, this is a man's game and this is part of whatever. But that's not the case here because, sometimes people, you know what this person was trying to do. And there's no way around it.
No,
that it was just a part of the game, or it was just like any macho-ness. It was you're trying to, I mean, I guess hurt this guy's feelings. I mean, there's no other way, and not that, and this something like this wouldn't even hurt his feelings. It's so childish.
It is. It's just disrespectful.
Exactly.
You know?
And more than that, it's like, you know that this player is he's not. In the MLS because he's gay. He's not getting more things in his life because he's gay. He worked just as hard to get to it.
He was on the national team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're not gonna, no one's gonna see your point of view. And more than anything, it's just incredibly childish and useless.
Right.
And really doesn't help with look, there's you're saying that, and there's a banner next to you that says, say no to racism, say no to discrimination. Like,
there's commercials being played at the halftime that say, like, don't cross the line.
We've seen people throw banana peels at players. During, and like, there's already so much to deal with.
Yeah, you should not be throwing bananas unless someone had a cramp. Then that's, I hear it's good for that. A little potassium.
Yeah, you throw, I mean, you, if you
peel, you got to throw the whole thing.
The whole thing. You don't. Not just the peel. That's very,
the peel is very disrespectful.
I mean, very little nutritional value, that peel.
Not a lot there. Maybe scrape some of the, you know, the insides, but then also it hit the ground. I mean, nobody wants to.
But look, and that's a big thing. Like, the players themselves are, there's already been very much documented incidents of terrible things happening when it comes to the fans and discrimination and racism and all these things, that the players don't need to do it to each other because they already have witnessed it or deal with it, or it's a real concern.
Right. Just one insensitive player. And, you know, hopefully, you know, this isn't the type of character he is. Maybe this was out of character for him, and he can change. Or if not, you know, you're off the team. I'm assuming that's what's going to happen. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the fallout is. We don't know who it is yet. But we're so sorry for Robbie Rogers that he had to put up with that.
Robbie will be fine.
Yeah, he will be all right.
Back in the
first
game.
You ain't the first, and hopefully you're the last.
Just think one thing before we end Cooligan's Corner and end the show. I want a huge shout out to Ty Yoder.
There he is, the man from Columbus, Ohio.
I believe, he's a big Crew fan.
Tough season for him.
And he sent us, Ty does woodworking.
Yeah.
And he makes stuff out of wood.
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome.
We're from New York. That surprises us.
Like, what? You use your hands for what?
Yeah.
Like,
what part of IKEA did he get this? We don't understand. Like, wait a minute. Was this on Etsy, bro? You know, we don't get it.
No, but Ty does woodworking and he does a lot of great stuff. And he was kind enough to send us a bottle opener.
Yeah.
I mean, handcrafted, gorgeous. Finished the whole thing.
It's a beautiful piece.
A beautiful bottle opener. And now we have to develop drinking problems so we can put it to really good use.
Or just kickstart them back up. You know?
No, but this is so awesome, and we're very, very grateful. So, Ty, if you want to see, he does woodworking, and he does, you know, he'll send you stuff if any, like,
you buy it.
You buy it.
Buy it from him.
Any things that, like, you might want to have made or things like that, makes great gifts and stuff like that. So follow him on Instagram. It's at @T_Yoder_woodworking. So,
and Yoder is Yoder.
Exactly.
So, yeah, thank you so much, dude. And, you know, too bad that Columbus Crew SC is not having that great of a season.
Yeah, but they just...
But we are. We're having a good season.
They just beat New England, so that was...
Yeah, so there's some hope.
So there's some hope.
How many more Camaras do you have on the team?
just going to be 11 Camaras just, one day.
Every time somebody leaves, 11 Camaras would be hilarious. The kit man's like, we need more Ks. We're out of A. We're out of everything.
So many R's.
Instead of a camera guy, you have a Camara guy. Everybody's a Camara now. Guys, this has been an amazing episode. Thank you so much to John Arnold. Thank you so much. You were absolutely clutch. Great interview. To all the FC Dallas fans who are listening, we don't always talk about FC Dallas. We try our hardest. Please continue listening. If you like general soccer talk, that is us. My name is Alexis Guerreros.
My name is Christian Polanco.
And together we are the Cooligans.